you want a vision of the future, Winston, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Someone is trying to teach me a lesson in futility. Why am I the only one who isn't killed?
They will run you dizzy. They will pile falsehood on top of falsehood until you can't tell a lie from the truth and you won't even want to. That's how the powerful keep their power. Don't you read the papers?
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, sir, you.
Plastics.
I'm going to get your money for you. But if you don't get the President of the United States on that phone, you know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
The world is a college of corporations, inexorably determined by the immutable bylaws of business. The world is a business, Mr. Beale. It has been since man crawled out of the slime.
Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have April Bowden on the show. April, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on the show.
And well, thanks for asking. It's a pleasure.
Okay, and your story. I have you on to talk about your own personal story regarding your son and your family and. How vaccines impacted your family and the wider issue of vaccine, the whole vaccine paradigm. Like I said, you are a mom, former podcast host and a blogger. And I think your website is AidensRecoveryWordPress.com still? That's your primary website?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And is there anything about the website you want to tell the audience about? Or?
Well, anybody can go, like you said, you gave away the website. It's AidensRecovery.WordPress.com. Right now, there's a link on there to the Truth About Vaccines docuseries, which Aiden and I appear in. And I don't know which episode we're in because it's just airing now, but people can go to that website and sign up for that. And I think it's been received pretty well. If people aren't familiar, Ty Bollinger did a series of The Truth About Cancer. He did two docuseries on that, and this is the third docuseries that he's doing about vaccines. So if you guys want to check that out, that's at my website right now, and a few other things that I've been putting out lately. So.
Oh, great. Okay. And, well, let's hear your story, how we get into this, because it's a very complex topic, and also very, in the final analysis, a sweeping topic, because it involves so much. Part of a bigger story, and I guess we're all part of this bigger story. And it affected you in a particular way, and it affected a lot of other people too. So let's hear your story with your son and how you got into this activism against the vaccine paradigm.
As you mentioned, I'm a mom and I have three children. And my oldest son, when he was a baby, and we were going through the process of taking him to the pediatrician for his well baby checkups, which are basically where doctors bring you in to have the child vaccinated. I had asked all these questions about the safety of vaccines because I was really clueless. I didn't know anything about medical science. I hadn't researched anything like that before, and I didn't really consider myself very science savvy person at the time. And so I went through the process of asking these questions from stories that I had heard anecdotally through from parents, and actually, and a nurse as well. So I'd heard little stories about the MMR vaccine and the mercury or the thimerosal in vaccines, and I asked the doctors these questions. And for parents who have gone through this before, a lot of times the doctors will really kind of make you feel stupid or ridicule you for even bothering to ask. And so I got kind of the brush off, like, oh, well, you know, that's not, there's no truth to that. That's last year's problem, was what one of the doctors said to me. And then another really dismissed everything I had said about concerns over the MMR vaccine. And he had proceeded to tell me a fallacious story about Andrew Wakefield. I didn't know that that's who he was talking about at the time, but he had said that the doctor had lied and made up all these stories. Basically, what most people hear in the mainstream media about Andrew Wakefield was what he regurgitated back to me. And so I thought I had done my due diligence and I had asked these questions. And so I just went ahead and complied with the vaccine program. And so when my oldest son, who had been sick and we had held off on some of the vaccines, I didn't put two and two together that the sickness that he experienced might have been related to the vaccines. And I hadn't thought that, you know, maybe he didn't get as sick because of the fact that we had delayed him. I didn't put any of that together. So when my second son was born, I figured the doctors were right and there was nothing to this whole vaccine thing. And I went ahead and vaccinated on schedule without really asking any questions. And when he was, so my second son just went with the program. And when he was 13 months old, he received the MMR, the pneumococcal, and the varicella, which is for chickenpox vaccine, in one day. And after that, he was just a little over a year old, as I said, and he started to lose some of the language that he had gained. And he had developed sort of odd language patterns. Like he would say full sentences, but you couldn't understand what he was saying. And he would repeat words over and over again. So he was still talking, but it was sort of odd. And he had gotten sick, by the way, too. There was the other thing. Before that happened, he had gotten a fever, and nobody else in the house was sick, so it appeared that it did come from the vaccine. He was really sick, and when he came out of it, the sickness is when we started to notice the bizarre language pattern. And he also started walking on his toes and doing other things, like he had forgotten how to play on the playground, like the slide and the swings and some of the things that he had already been doing. He just sort of forgot how to do them. And so I kind of was suspicious of the vaccines at the time. They had convinced me so well up to that point that there was no connection. And I didn't know at that time, autism rates were about 1 in 150. So I didn't know anybody else who had autistic kid. So I didn't necessarily know that he was autistic, but I did notice that there was something going on. And I didn't actually put it together yet. So the next time we brought him into the doctor to have his checkup and have more baby shots, I mentioned it to the doctor and I said, you know, that his language was sort of strange and that some of these things weren't progressing the way that they had been. And she just kind of dismissed it and said, well, you know, he's within the normal range. He's still talking. He's still saying a few words here and there. So that's pretty normal still, and not to worry about it. And, you know, she didn't think there was anything to the vaccine. Kind of just really sloughed it off and dismissed it. So I believed her, and I went ahead and let him be vaccinated again. And so the second time, Aiden regressed again, and he started developing severe gastrointestinal problems. He had diarrhea. He couldn't sleep well at night. He would wake up every single night in the middle of the night because he was having gut pain. He had to go to the bathroom. And this went on for years, and not just after the vaccine, but for years to come after that. He continued to have gastrointestinal problems for, you know, up until he was 10, 11 years old. And so anyway, so at this point I did, you know, I was becoming more and more suspicious, and I didn't really, we were starting to notice more regression as well. So a lot of the words that he was still saying, but in the odd pattern, was starting to disappear also. So that was just, he just kind of stopped talking completely. And it was sort of subtle, because it went bit by bit, and that's where, but then all of a sudden it was just gone. So that I brought him back to the doctor, and this time she didn't vaccinate him, but she diagnosed him with autism and referred him to the early intervention program. And he was just about 2.5. So the way that the system works is that you get referred to early intervention before the age of 3 if you have a diagnosis of autism. And then after 3, the program gets referred to the school district. So at 2.5, we went through the process of putting him through the early intervention program, where he was just starting to get some therapies. And the therapies that he was receiving were beginning to help. He was regaining some language, and he had learned all the names of the animals on his favorite puzzle, which was a zoo puzzle, and he was starting to regain some of this stuff. So by the time he turned 3 and they wanted to transition him from the early intervention program to the public school system, it was really scary, and I wanted to make sure that he maintained this progress that he had made. But of course, to send him to school, they required more vaccines. And I think it was just one that he had to receive at the time, one or two. And so I said, "Ugh, well, I really don't want to do this. But at the same time, I don't want to lose the progress that he's made. And if he has to be taken out of the early intervention program, then I guess I'm going to go ahead and let them do this just so he can stay in these therapies because they've been so helpful so far." But once he got the vaccines to go to school at the age of 3, he not only lost all the language that he had regained, but he also started becoming very self-injurious. So he was banging his head and biting his arm and doing a lot of things that were disturbing because the gastrointestinal problems began to increase. So it was this thing where he would wake up in the middle of the night and have GI issues and that to a point that it was chronic. And then he was having food intolerances and things that hadn't been present before. But he was just a mess all day long. He was really uncomfortable. And so at this point, it was too obvious. I couldn't let them tell me otherwise. And even still, when I mentioned it to the doctor that he had been vaccine injured and that I was certain of it, at this point, she denied it. And she wanted me to believe that even his digestive symptoms were actually common and normal for somebody with autism, but she had no explanation as to why, and explained to me that a lot of kids with autism had food allergies, but had no explanation as to why. So that's how the system works at the pediatrician's office. When you go in and they perform these kind of Jedi mind tricks on you and ask questions about these vaccines, they really convince you that it really has nothing to do with it, and that you're being a bad parent and being negligent if you don't allow your child to be vaccinated, because you're setting them up for disease and failure. And, you know, in this case, they were convincing me that he wasn't going to be able to receive any more therapies, which I would find out later wasn't true. But at the time, you know, I was just thrust into this program, and I was just doing whatever I thought we could to try and get him back and recover some of these skills that he had lost. So it was really the nail in the coffin. He was really sick after that. And it's taken years for him to recover. And he's just had a birthday and he turned 12. And so some of those things that he lost at that time, he still hasn't recovered. So that's really what started me into this research. And I went into this vaccine rabbit hole. I mean, it is a rabbit hole. It just never seems to end once you start looking into it. And once I started using my brain and critically thinking and actually trying to decipher fact from fiction, I could see that the evidence was overwhelming, that the science behind vaccines causing these problems was actually there, despite what the doctors had told me, and that there was that this was a huge issue, not just for autism, but that vaccines were causing all kinds of illnesses. And then once it was in front of me, I could just see it everywhere in just about everything. So, but that's what started me on this road. And I started writing this blog for Aiden's recovery that you mentioned at the beginning of the show. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's I really feel for you. That's a terrible story. It's because, I mean, you're relying on the professionals, you're relying on the institutions that we're all taught to trust, the medical institutions, educational institutions, and they all fail you, and they're all corrupted, apparently. Right. It's interesting that it seemed like Aiden's body was trying to repair itself, and each time the professionals step in and just make it worse. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're trusting the person in the white coat. They're the expert. You're just a dumb parent, as that's how they look at it. Now, at the time, I mean, I know you're looking back at it now. It's almost, yeah, because you look back at it, you see Aiden, you know, recovering somewhat. Then he reaches the next stage, and then they give him another dose, and that just does more damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is, you know, I'm interested in her comment about that's last year's problem. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, the doctor, when I asked her about the mercury and the vaccines, she said that that was last year's problem. And I didn't know that she didn't really answer my question.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really an answer. And but I took it like she was answering my question, but you know, she wouldn't look at me. She brushed me off with her hand. She was very dismissive and made me feel as though I was asking, and I felt kind of, overwhelmed, like they were so above me and that they knew so much more than I did, that I didn't, you know, that I was easily compliant. It wasn't that I didn't, that I thought anti-vaxxers were crazy or that vaccines were so important. It was just that I was compliant because I didn't know any better. And I thought that, because when you go to research vaccines, if you're a layperson and you really don't have a background in a lot of this stuff, what you'll get, you'll be inundated with information coming from both sides and not being able to tell what's fact and what's fiction. You're not being able to tell the difference between a news article and a scientific publication, you know, or not being able to tell the difference between junk science and actual science.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see all this contradictions and all this contradiction of information, and you just really don't know where to go. So I had to look at what basically happened was when I first started researching this stuff, I wasn't looking to be an anti-vaxxer or an anti-vaxxer. I didn't really care. I just wanted to help Aiden get better. So when I started researching it, I was actually just trying to find treatments and ways to help him. And so I was reading a lot of doctors who had been looking at this from a biomedical standpoint, which is more biological and not just as, because the way autism is diagnosed is actually as a behavioral problem, but they don't look at it as a medical problem. They don't look at it as a problem, you know, but a lot of doctors, Bernard Rimland was one of the pioneers who actually looked at it, and he had a son on the spectrum as well, and created a program around trying to help them physically and trying to fix this damage that had occurred from a medical standpoint. But I mean, he used basically a natural approach. He had a lot of vitamin supplements and a lot of, you know, dietary interventions and and some sound therapy and things like this that were trying to help regulate their bodies and bring their bodies back to a homeostasis. And then so I was researching a lot of that because I wanted to figure out how to fix the problem. I wasn't looking to try and, you know, open up this Pandora's box. I just wanted to help Aiden. And so, but I couldn't help it because everything that I was reading about kept going into, well, this is how this happens, the vaccines. And once I started looking at the vaccines, and one of the questions that people forget to ask when you're asking your pediatrician or you're asking anybody in this argument is, well, what's in a vaccine? And people don't even ask that question. It's the simplest question to ask, but nobody asks it. And so once I actually saw what was in them, I said, oh, well, no wonder these kids are having so many problems, because it was just a holy list. I mean, and I would take a list of vaccine ingredients, just one vaccine, and start breaking down the ingredients that were in there. And you could just pull each one of them up on Wikipedia, and it will say, this is carcinogenic, this is neurotoxic. You know, you'll get a whole list of what these are, aluminum and mercury and polysorbate 80. And then, you know, bizarre things that I would have to look up because I wouldn't even know what they were. And I would find out that, you know, this was code word, or, you know, their term for, using aborted fetal cell lines or insect DNA, and bizarre things. And you're thinking, why is that in a vaccine? It's so strange, but it's in there, and it's and that doesn't even include the contaminants. So then once you started pulling all that stuff up, and a lot of the kids who of my son's generation received the MMR was contaminated with a chicken virus that causes cancer in chickens. And it was in the vaccine. It was contaminated. They didn't pull it because they said that it wasn't actually causing causing a problem in humans, or they couldn't tell if it was causing a problem in humans. But I mean, they only conduct these studies over a course of a few months. They don't actually know. But, you know, it was just, I couldn't believe it. You know, I couldn't believe what a list of things was in there. I had no idea. I just thought that it was saline solution and a virus, if I thought anything at all. I thought that that's what it would be. But once I started doing the research on trying to help Aiden get better, and I realized that this was a toxicity problem, it was hard to ignore that this was caused by vaccines. The more I researched, the more clear it was, the more obvious it was. But it just, you know, when you're in that situation as a parent and you don't know how to look into it, you know, you're really putting your trust into somebody who you think knows what they're talking about, but they don't actually.
Yeah.
You know, doctors are taught very, very little about vaccines in medical school. In fact, the only thing that they're taught is the schedule. They have no idea what's in them or if they work or anything like that.
That's right. They have to follow the more or less the CDC, and that's it, right? The CDC scheduling, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah, but in medical school, I mean, they're not even – you can get more information from the CDC than you can from your medical the medical books that they get when they're studying, because all they know is the schedule. They actually don't know whether or not they work. They actually don't know what's in them, and they don't know the side effects.
Yeah, and the schedule was gone for like, I mean, when I was a kid, it was 3 or 4 vaccines, and now it's up close to 40 now, and now they're planning 150 or something.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, the vaccines that are in development are just off the charts. And what's even more bizarre is that many of the vaccines that are in development are actually things that we know are caused by vaccines. You know, and just on and on, it's just we know that they're connected. And
no, I know where you're coming from. I have 6 children of my own.
Oh, wow.
And they range in age 16 to 2, and each child was vaccinated less and less and less, as I learned.
Mm-hmm.
Till the final boy we had back a couple of years ago, it was a home birth, midwife, and completely unvaccinated. He's completely unvaccinated. And you know, he's perfectly healthy. He's breastfed and these things. And this is the problem: is that so much of the modern world doesn't allow for the normal developments that children are supposed to have. One thing really is, you know, at the baby's mother's breast and feeding, getting all the necessary nutrients and also the immunities that the mother has. But
exactly.
The generation of mothers have been vaccinated themselves. They don't a lot of the benefits that used to be there aren't there anymore because they're vaccinated. And there's no, I mean, from what I understand is there's no, I mean, natural immunity is far superior than any, you know, immunity, so-called immunity you get from a needle, because your body,
right.
You know, your respiratory system, your whole body interacts with it. And whereas if you get it, that's why you have to get booster shots and things like that, you know, and, so you might many like I said, I look at my family, and you know, from all appearances, you know, they appear to be perfectly healthy. But I do know, you know, little things like, you know, like my daughter has slight skin rashes that used to flare up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, wonder why that is. Well, it's an autoimmune reaction. Is it because she was vaccinated? You don't know. You know, so I mean, I think a lot of people simply since they dodged the overt bullet, you know,
right.
They think, well, it's, you know, my kid's healthy, so it must be okay. It's, you know,
I think that's true, and in a lot of cases, people from the research that I've done over the years, and I've been doing this, you know, Aiden, as I mentioned, he just turned 12, so I mean, I've got almost 10 years that I've been studying this. Vaccines really, if you get a vaccine, there's a good chance, there's almost 100% chance that there's going to be some kind of damage. It's just a matter of when or how it's going to manifest.
Mm-hmm.
So if people dodge the bullet of seeing it really early on, as we do in the case with autism, they tend to regress between the ages of 1 and 3. And so we see it early. You might think that you have managed to not get sick from it. But, you know, the generation that first started receiving vaccines, that's when we saw the rise of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been, that, I mean, cancer wasn't the issue that it is today before the vaccines. And we know that vaccines cause cancer because everything in them is a carcinogen. And we know that they haven't been tested for carcinogenic effects.
Cancer wasn't big business yet.
No.
So, right. You know, we might get to the heart of the matter there, right? Business. And I remember when I was, like you, I just, accepted the system for what it was. Medical system, I thought the medical system had, had our best interest at heart, and they're looking to heal people. And when I went to college, I got the shots. I even got a flu shot once in a while. Then I just started to realize, I just started reading up a little. It's kind of it was a gradual awareness of it. It wasn't like that you don't need a flu shot. You just need to, eat healthy and make sure you take maybe a vitamin D and C and it's a vitamin deficiency. And if you get sick, it's not very pleasant, but it's a good thing because your immune system becomes more educated with each interaction. And all the fraud, all the death, they talk about how many people die from flu, and it's like, no, it's not flu, it's flu-like symptoms. And it's the way they play this, they have the whole thing with get the shot, not the flu. You see it at drugstores, and they get a whole propaganda machinery at work here.
Yeah, and the flu shot is one of the most ridiculous shots of them all, because the flu strand mutates every year. So by the time that they've created the vaccine, it's for the flu strand that was circulating the year before. So it doesn't even work. I mean, they know it doesn't work. And most people who, you probably hear the stories about, people who get the flu shot, then they get the flu, or then they get flu-like symptoms. And then doctors will say, well, that's not the flu, it's flu-like symptoms. But I see if you're going to get sick either way, then what's the point? Why not just take your chances and see if you can actually beat the flu just on your own? And if you get it, well, then you have natural immunity, and that immunity is going to be for life versus this, quasi immunity that vaccination gives you. Because, as you, said before, the mothers who have been vaccinated, you brought up a good point with that, is that the mothers who've been vaccinated don't pass on the natural immunity to the babies. So that's why we're seeing a resurgence of a lot of these diseases, like the measles has come back when it was pretty much eradicated. But a lot of that is speculation, but people like Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and others are saying that it's because the mothers who are breastfeeding their babies don't actually have immunity, because the immunity wears off. And it's not even real immunity. It's just antibodies. They can test you to see if you have antibodies to a particular disease, but that doesn't actually mean that you have immunity. So you can have the antibodies present and still get the disease, or you may not have the antibodies present and you won't get the disease because you have enough of your system is efficient enough that it will fight it off on its own. So it's really a hoax all the way around. I mean, I can't really find any good reason anyone should receive a vaccine, period. And like you, I do have I have a daughter who's unvaccinated as well. She's 2.5, and we did the same thing, midwife, home birth, all that, and she's fine and developing just fine and not having any problems. If anything, she's way accelerated. And Aiden, by the way, was very accelerated too before the vaccines. He had actually started crawling when he was 4 months old and was walking by the time he was 10 months old, and he was talking by a year. So this was clearly not a genetic thing. It wasn't something that he just, had a bad luck of the draw. I mean, it was definitely vaccine injury.
And the doctor actually said this regression was normal.
Well, she did. Yeah, she said that the initial regression after the first time that I noticed when he was 13 months, she said that was normal. That he kids could lose language and it would come back and it's not a big deal. As long as he was still talking and he was within the normal range, that was normal. It's not normal at all, but she did tell me that it was. But I would later find out that was a complete lie. I mean, it's not normal at all. Kids shouldn't be losing language that they gain.
Yeah, they
and they shouldn't be having, and it's not normal for just because a kid has a diagnosis of a neurological disorder, it's not normal for them to be having, gastrointestinal problems and diarrhea and sleeping issues and things like that. That's all a sign of of an immune dysregulation or autoimmune disease, something more serious.
Yeah, inflammatory. So
kind of stop it off.
There's an inflammatory disorder there, and or inflammation is a reaction to, well, it's an autoimmune reaction. Well, with, considering that they have all these adjuvants that are designed to stimulate immune reaction to these things, you create autoimmune disorders. That's why we've had these explosions of autoimmune disorders, whether it's allergies, peanut allergies, or things like that are, you know, like lupus, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the body's was it squalene that they put in that, and your body actually produces it naturally, but they put it in it to stimulate.
Right.
Well, the only problem is that this is not natural squalene, so your body starts to attack its own tissue. And well, doesn't that, to me, that sounds like lupus.
Yeah. I mean, it is. A lot of these autoimmune diseases are brand new too. I mean, we hadn't seen chronic fatigue or Crohn's disease or any of these other things until recent years, within the last 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And so it's directly correlated to the rise of vaccines, the rise of these autoimmune diseases and brand new things that we never saw before. And if you watch television at all, you see all these pharmaceutical ads, they're have drugs for all of these things, and they're mostly anti-inflammatories, so they know that it's causing a lot of inflammation. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, that was, I mean, I was listening to Andy Wakefield. He was talking about, you know, the kids that were banging their head against the wall, and the mothers were getting from the doctors, they more or less said, well, your kid's just neurologically abnormal. It was a birth defect.
Right.
And it turns out these kids were just in physical agony. And I think it was Dr. Wakefield who addressed the diet issue and it relieved the pain. So they stopped banging their head. And just that one little thing made life livable at their home. Because they weren't putting this constant banging and screaming. And because he took the time to do cultures on, you know, he took stool samples and did tests. Instead of just saying, well, you're just one of those neurologically, neurologically defective kids. No, this was their pain. These kids, they had no way other way to express their pain. And it's just because there's a doctor taking time and not just prescribing pills. He was able to at least address that issue. But I was listening to John Rappaport. I'm sure you're familiar with John Rappaport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was talking about autism. Autism itself isn't really – autism is a term we use for a series of behavioral traits that we see in people who are neurologically damaged. So they're these children are neurologically damaged for some reason or another.
Yeah.
And a chief suspect would be the vaccines, which introduce all this foreign matter, whether it's aluminum, mercury, formaldehyde, all types of preservatives, and whatever happens to fall in there, or what they put in there they don't tell you about. You know,
right?
And none of the stuff, as you mentioned earlier, none of the stuff you take on its own. I mean, mercury, you know, they took it removed thermometers out of schools because mercury was so dangerous, but they're injecting it into people. And I heard a thing talking about today about with some of these vaccines. I think it was with the might have been the flu. I'm not sure what child he was talking about, but it introduces mercury to a child that's 80 times what the EPA says is an acceptable for an adult for exposure.
Yes.
It's that bad.
Yeah, a lot of these ingredients are illegal to have in your mattress or to have in your couch or your furniture. So you can't have those even touch your skin, but you can inject them into your body when you're a baby. Mm-hmm. So it's completely illogical. And, you know, they don't address that. And that's why I say that's a big elephant in the room. It's like, well, what's in a vaccine? Can we even just have that discussion about what's in them? And why do we have to have so many toxins in them? But I mean, there's really no passageway out, because the way that they're injected into the body, it's such an unnatural process. You would never receive you would never get an illness like that unless you were a drug user. And so you wouldn't get it in a natural way. And so the body isn't really prepared to handle that. So a lot of these things kind of linger and they find their way just sort of hanging on, you know. And we, for Amy Meissen, for example, we did titers on him just about a little over a year ago. And he still hangs on to a lot of he has elevated titers to some of these vaccines that he's received, as if his body's still fighting the illness. And then
titers, is that density of antibodies?
Yes, exactly. So if you have a high level of antibodies, they consider you to be immune. If you don't have enough, then you're not immune. So we would see this sort of some are extremely high, like elevated above where they should be, as if his body's still fighting the illness, and then below, in which case he's not immune. So we can clearly see that many of the vaccines that he received didn't work at all because he doesn't have the immunity for them. And then some of them are still within the body. And that's one of the things that Dr. Wakefield looked at, and you mentioned earlier. And he was looking, he with his colleague, Dr. Arthur Krigsman, and they were looking at a lot of the kids who regressed after receiving the MMR vaccine. What they found was that they didn't necessarily have elevated titers, but they were able to find measles in their guts and in their intestines, because Dr. Krigsman had invented a pill camera. And so it was a camera the size of a pill, so the child could swallow it and they could take pictures of the inside of the intestines. So they found years later that they still had a measles rash in their intestines. So if you have a measles rash in your intestines, it's not hard to figure out that these kids are in severe pain in their gut. I mean, that would be just excruciating inflammation.
And wouldn't that also possibly explain the neurological damage?
Oh, well, for sure, yeah, because there are more neurotransmitters in the gut than there are in the brain. So the gut is considered like the second brain and has a lot to do with your – yeah, and so the gut problems are definitely related. And that's all Dr. Wakefield was really looking at. I mean, and if you look at his research, there's really nothing wrong or sinister about any of the work that he did. They didn't actually remove his papers because of the fact that there was any flaws in his research. They just didn't like the way he took blood tests. That's all it had to do with, or that's what they claimed anyway, but that was the official story, if you believe that. But the research itself was good, and he just found that these kids that had these neurological problems, that it was a symptom of their gastrointestinal problems. And he found that they presented slightly different than his Crohn's disease patients, though they had a lot of similarities. And he called it autistic enterocolitis, which just means that it was severe gut dysbiosis, and which just means it's disoriented or dysregulated, irregular, and severely inflamed. And that was causing a lot of these problems.
And for a child who has lost what little, you know, language ability he had, to suffer that pain, he has no other way to express himself other than this behavior that many doctors saw as just signs of neurological problems. No, this was a medical issue that needed to be addressed. And if you address that, you'd stop some of these acute symptoms, you know, the pounding of the head against the wall, things like that. Take a little time with your patient, and you might see that. Right. And also listen to the mothers.
Right.
You know, doctors don't listen to people anymore. They're trained to tell them what to do. Yeah. It's they have very poor bedside manner now, and it's all part of that system, I suppose. How they're trained to, you know, I guess, prescribe and dispense, and that's just about it. As opposed to, you know, because every patient's going to be different anyway. That's another problem right there with mass inoculation or vaccinations. Now, again, it's with your son. I mean, so here we have a situation. So you saw. I mean, you've unfortunately experienced this personally. And you've had to cope with the problem of, you know, now you have a vaccine damaged son. And so, I mean, this is what motivates this, probably, unfortunately, that's the type of motivation people need to really be concerned about this. But nevertheless, you saw what vaccinations are. You saw what damage it did. But then you started to see the whole logic behind the vaccination paradigm. And perhaps looking into the history of vaccinations, what did you find about the history of vaccinations and how we've been kind of fed a false history about their efficacy and their safety?
Well, what I found was that this was one of the biggest hoaxes in human history. I couldn't believe how in our face it was that this whole thing was a lie. Because one of the things we're not taught much about vaccines in our life, but you do hear the stories that, you know, Jonas Salk cured polio, which is false. And, you know, you hear these stories about Edward Jenner and smallpox, and so much of it is just false. I couldn't believe when I started looking into it how inaccurate it was. You know, so for example, the polio history if anyone's had any taken any effort into looking into that. So a lot of the times, one of the things that the sound bites is when you hear doctors saying, well, you don't want polio to come back. You don't want to, you know, I've lived through a time when people had iron lung and all this and stuff. But really, polio was actually considered a relatively common and not very serious disease. It had been it didn't cause paralysis in the majority of people who had it. In fact, it was less than 1%. I think it was like 0.001%. It was a very small number of people actually experienced paralysis. So you could get polio, you could get sick, and you would pass it like a normal cold. And then what happened was industry at the time, in the agriculture industry, had introduced certain pesticides, DDT and lead arsenic. And these were causing episodes of paralysis in the areas where it was being used. They were seeing these clusters. And initially, these people who were getting this were being treated for toxicity. But because this was pointing the finger at industry, the CDC did what it often does, which this happens all the time. They changed the diagnosis of polio. So then polio became this thing that caused paralysis. And it was really dangerous, and they needed to find a cure. And because they didn't want to point to the fact that this was actually being caused by industry. And so it was a cover-up that was the case. And as they were weaning these pesticides from the environment, these serious cases of polio started to diminish. And as they were starting to diminish, they were calling polio, okay, but they weren't. It was a toxicity problem, or it was connected, but it wasn't just the polio. So as these were starting to diminish, then Jonas Salk comes up with the vaccine, and then everybody runs up to get the vaccine because they had induced so much fear in everybody that this was such a serious problem and everyone was so afraid of it that people lined up and willingly took the vaccine. But it was already starting to diminish, and that's the thing that they don't tell you. And so as it continued to go down, then it was almost completely eradicated. You know, Jonas Salk came out as the big hero, and they said that he cured polio. But it's not true. He didn't. It was already on the decline because they knew that it was being caused by the pesticides. These episodes of paralysis were being caused by the pesticides. So they were already trying to wean that out. So that's one huge lie that people are told, and it's a huge soundbite that you'll get over and over and over again. So as I started to uncover this stuff and I started to see how many lies there were, I couldn't believe it, because when Aiden was being injured, I was thinking, well, at least he's immune from these diseases then, right? Like, he'll never get these diseases. So once I started to uncover that the whole thing was false, I started to realize they were completely useless. I mean, he wasn't even going to be immune to the diseases necessarily. And as it turns out, that's not the case. But that immunity doesn't come that way, that isn't how the body actually works. You don't actually produce a false immunity. Immunity, or we don't know, that's never been proven. And that vaccines have actually never been proven to provide immunity. They can only be proven to provide antibodies, whether the majority of the people who receive them have a high level of antibodies or not. But they don't actually know if you're that person who's going to get sick. And what's funny is that if you read the vaccine inserts, every single one of them will tell you that. Every single one will tell you this may not prevent your illness at all. And and we don't know if this is going to cause you to get cancer because we haven't tested for that. And we don't know if this is going to cause mutagenics. So in other words, it might even actually cause you to have a genetic mutation, and because we're inserting you with all these toxins and we're inserting you with foreign DNA, which they know causes genetic mutations. Because it's a established science. Insertional mutagenesis is something that when a foreign DNA has entered you, then it can actually cause scrambling. It can cause genes to either switch on or off or mutate slightly. And this is something that they know, but they don't test for it because they already know that the vaccines will cause it. And so it's a well-established science. So once I started to see all that, you know, then it became kind of a responsibility to speak on it. Because like I said, I didn't really, I wasn't trying to be an activist. I wasn't trying to go that way. I just wanted to help Aiden. That's all I was really concerned about. And but once I knew what I knew, I couldn't unknow it. And so then I started writing. And as I started writing, I was just trying to write kind of a mommy blog where I was talking about recipes and anecdotal stories about the kids and things like that. But what ended up coming out was I just told the truth. And it resonated with a lot of people and also pushed a lot of people away. But once I got going, it was just, that was the end of that. And then I just kept doing more, the more and more research I did, the more and more I found out how the whole thing was a complete hoax from the beginning. And it just, it blew me away. It blew me away that this was something that could be, the wool could be pulled over people's eyes so completely. But it was.
Now, you mentioned, of course, Jonas Salk. His vaccine was pulled from the market. I think they brought in the Sabin vaccine. Mm-hmm. It was the one that was most people got after they pulled the Salk vaccine from the market. But Jonas Salk himself, he was actually an advocate of eugenics, I believe, and mm-hmm. he's been since been I guess he was involved in some involuntary or testing of human beings with some of his vaccines back in the 50s. Elderly people. Of course, there's a long history of that here in the United States and other countries as well. Testing mm-hmm. Prisoners. Using the prisons and psychiatric wards as test subjects, and of course we have the history of the Manhattan Project, and I think they gave radiation to some retarded children.
Mm-hmm.
I put them in their oatmeal. I think this was in Massachusetts, in a hospital up in Massachusetts, and then they gave them tickets to a Red Sox game as compensation or something. There's a dark history. It's a very sinister history. So it really makes you wonder what ultimately their intentions are. I mean, obviously you can't trust them.
A eugenics program isn't something that isn't. Eugenics programs is nothing new. I mean, we have a long history of eugenics programs, and it isn't sort of PC to talk about it, but that is what these programs are, because a eugenics program is interested in the masses, not in the individual. So they might, even if they believe their vaccine programs work, the interest is in sort of a broader, like the greater good kind of idea, that this is just going to happen. You know, we're just going to fix this whole problem all at once. And, you know, a few people are going to be collateral damage. And that's how eugenics works. I mean, even if they're looking at it from, that's the most benevolent it gets. It can get worse.
Yeah.
But that's about, you know.
Yeah, Edmund Black has a book, I think it's A War on the Weak. It gets to the whole philosophy about the greater good, and and that's the road to hell right there, when you start creating those rationalizations that violate morality and the sanctity and the inherent value of the individual for the greater good. That's sort of the, I guess you could say, the Benthamite utilitarian argument that pervades Western thought, unfortunately, in a lot of things, whether it's foreign policy, economics, and these things. That's a problem. But one thing, you mentioned all these vaccines, the history of vaccines, mm-hmm. the polio vaccine, the fact that they narrowed the diagnostic parameters at the very time they said they cured polio. They didn't really cure it. They just redefined it. The people are still suffering paralysis. There's ventilators and have replaced iron lungs. We have multiple sclerosis, which is just a paralysis that sets in. They don't really know. Again, I think there's a lot of evidence suggests that again is a response to toxins. The multiple toxins that we're subjected to in our diet and in our environment. Look at the sweeteners, the artificial sweeteners like aspartame. And I'm familiar with what Dr. Blaylock's talked about aspartame, what it does to the brain. And neurological damage it does, and some people have linked that to some of these neurological problems, which sometimes manifests itself in things like multiple sclerosis or ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. You mentioned the toxins. It's kind of funny because remember FDR was a big champion of polio and treatments for polio because he supposedly had polio, but now they think he didn't have polio. They think he was and he had been contaminated with toxins because he used to swim downstream of a river of a tannery, which mm-hmm. use all types of chemicals, and I think he suffered yeah. from that. Was it Barre syndrome, I think they call it?
Yeah, Guillain-Barre syndrome.
Yeah, I think that's what he had.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. I mean, the effects of that is not dissimilar to what, you know, autism is or any of these others, because it's how it affects the neurological system is through a system called praxis, which is where it's motor planning. It's when your brain is telling your body what to do. So when we see people with cerebral palsy or multiple sclerosis, they have some forms of paralysis and autism as well. You know, we see a lot of this shaking in the body and not really knowing what to do with their bodies it's all kind of similar in how it affects this system that we take for granted, which is this motor planning system where, you know, if you want a drink of water, your brain tells your body to go and get one and it knows what to do. But if you have this, if your system isn't working properly, you might know you want a drink of water, but your body will not cooperate in going over to get it. And so this is kind of what is actually at the core of what autism is. And this is why a lot of people look at it as a social disorder, because you say even someone who's very high functioning on the Asperger's side might not look you in the eye when they talk to you. Well, this is because they can't look at you and hear you at the same time. It's not that they don't want to hear what you're saying, or it's too overwhelming. They can't do both at once because their motor planning is askew. And this is a toxicity issue. And this is something, and I saw this just the other night on TV. There was an ad for one of these class action suits that you see where the drug companies have been found to have liability in letting people have these drugs that they knew caused this and this and that illness. And it was for multiple sclerosis and cerebral palsy. But vaccines, unfortunately, are immune. The pharmaceutical companies are not liable when there's a vaccine injury, so they cannot be sued directly. If a person gets a vaccine injury and they can prove it, they have to go through a kangaroo court called the vaccine court. And if they win their case, the money comes from the taxpayer and not from the pharmaceutical companies themselves. So this is why we don't see those kinds of ads on TV, because you cannot form a class action suit against the pharmaceutical companies. It's not allowed in this country.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, I think that's since 1986, I think, that's existed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not liable for their product.
That's how
much confidence they have in it. And hasn't the Supreme Court also ruled that these vaccines are unsafe?
Yeah, they consider them unavoidably unsafe.
Yeah.
So you can't. They claim that you can't avoid them because they're so important. And in 1986, the reason that President Reagan signed off on this was because there, as we had mentioned, there weren't that many vaccines back in our days. You know, we didn't get that many. But even the small number that there were causing so much damage that the pharmaceutical companies were threatened to lose the program. If they hadn't become immune from their liability, the program would have failed. So in order to keep the program alive, he signed off on it so that the program could continue. And then they just kept, once they got that immunity, it was game on. They could just keep adding vaccines to the schedule, and anything that they have mandated, you cannot sue them for.
And all this goes back to the big lie of the necessity of vaccines, the success of beating smallpox and polio, this false history. So this is the price of learning a false history, because then we won't have vaccines. What are we going to do? The fact of the matter is the health revolution of the 20th century occurred long before the introduction of vaccines, because it was a product of better health, higher mm-hmm. standard of living, public sanitation, better hygiene, diet, nutrition. Mm-hmm. And because the key is your own personal health. And if your body is healthy, you'll be able to interact with these diseases. In fact, oftentimes you won't even know you've been infected, because your body just fights it off. Sometimes you will know. And there will be some deaths, of course, unfortunately, that happens. But if you look at the final analysis, society is much healthier if people interact with these diseases naturally and they're healthier. But the stress is to improve public health, maybe nutrition programs. Maybe instead of taxpayers subsidizing vaccination programs overseas, they should look into supporting clean water, better food, mm-hmm. and also a cessation of all the civil wars and destabilization projects that the U.S. government and interested parties conduct in Africa and these things, because I personally think that a lot of that is the vaccines, the destabilization, the disease is all part of a plan to weaken some of these countries, make them more susceptible for penetration and exploitation.
Well, it's kind of obvious that that's what's going on if you really look at some of these things that are happening, because in the Philippines, for example, they had a vaccine program that they knew was contaminated with, I want to say it was HCG, which is a type of sterilant. And they knew the vaccine was contaminated with it. They found that out. And I don't even think they pulled it. I think it just continued on. And then I had mentioned on another show I did the other day that in Pakistan, they had a vaccination program. The parents of the children who were being vaccinated started killing doctors because they suspected that the vaccine was causing sterility in their children. And so they just started killing healthcare workers. And the later it came out that the vaccine program, the CIA admitted that it was actually a fake program that they had put into spy to try and find terrorists. And so then they tried to put up a real program and the people said, no, I don't think so. You know, and there was all this resistance. And I was like, well, of course they resisted once you're lying to them. And they're still not convinced that they weren't trying to sterilize their children.
Yeah,
in Africa, you know, and if the programs are so well received, then why do they have, I mean, in Malawi News a few years ago, they were rounding people up by gunpoint and trying to, and having to force them into, if the African people are so, you know, wanting to rid themselves of these diseases that we're thinking that they all have, and we're trying to come and chase after them, then why do we have to force it on them by gunpoint? You know, you'd think that they'd want to eradicate these diseases and they'd be willing, but that isn't the case. But that is what we're told. And then, you know, there's these programs through the Gates Foundation and a few others like that, that are really going in and forcing this on these people much more so than they want. They don't even want it. So it's, you know, and then they're just repackaging. Whenever there's a vaccine injury, they'll repackage it as AIDS, or they'll repackage it as, you know, something else.
Ebola or something. Yeah.
And never point to the vaccine.
Yeah.
And they're seeing, some of these third world countries are seeing their first cases of autism now. They're starting to see it as well. So it's quite clear that that's what they're, that is something that's going on. And a lot of times what happens when a drug or vaccine has been recalled in the States, it then gets sent to the third world.
Yes, yes. And, of course, Bill Gates infamously had that TED Talk where he talked about vaccines and reproductive health and how if we do a good job, we can reduce the population by 25%.
Right.
I was like, okay, it's right in your face there. He's talking about,
you
know, that's there to reduce the population. And, of course, they have these people suspecting that these vaccines are sterilizing them. Yeah, I'm sorry. They've been caught doing that. There was that tetanus program that it was in Nigeria where the Catholic Church caught them doing it. They found out that the women being given tetanus shots the people being given tetanus shots were women between the ages of like 15 and 45 or something, you know. And same thing, I think, in Latin America. And of course, in Puerto Rico, I think the Rockefeller Foundation successfully sterilized like 40% childbearing population in Puerto Rico, close to that. And all this is, you know, pure malevolence and illegal, and there's never any prosecution. I think there's a World Health Organization was involved with that tetanus program. And you have that, was it Insight or Insight? Insight, I think, is the company that developed the contraceptive corn.
Mm.
You know, so they're putting it in the food. And so, and not to mention what they've done with the plastics and the bisphenol A and what that does to the sperm count and, of course, the gender bending issues and things like that, where you can actually prevent the normal production of a male fetus through these chemicals because they're, you know, estrogen mimickers. So they prevent the injection of testosterone at a key moment in the baby's fetal development. And so they develop brains that are ambiguous, I guess you could say. And so, you know, it's a nature nurture thing, but not to mention the overall culture in general has become toxic in that regard. But the whole point here is with vaccines, if, you know, we hear these stories about, you know, these horrible jungle viruses with, you know, hemorrhagic fever like Ebola, and we don't know, of course, because what they do is they list a bunch of symptoms And they call it Ebola. They call it AIDS. Only problem is if you're dealing in a war-torn area where people suffer from malnutrition, exposure, those symptoms are going to come in any are going to be there anyway. It isn't necessarily an AIDS virus, an Ebola virus that's causing it, because the number one cause of disease in those areas is malnutrition and dirty water.
Right.
You know, so for a fraction of the cost, if you brought in clean food and cleaned the water, you'd solve the problem. But the problem is, I think the people who are implementing these programs, their goal isn't to help those people.
I think that these are just sort of experimental. As we talked before, there's a whole history of the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, it's really run by the same people, and they had a whole history of human experimentation. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think it's any different now. It's just that they don't have the same standards. I mean, as low as the standards are here in the U.S., they're even lower in the third world. So they're not going to, they can just go there and test whatever it is that they're working on. And they want to, it's just social Darwinism. It's kind of, you're trying to figure out, well, if we do this, what's going to happen? And what kind of society is this going to be? So, I mean, at the least it's experimentation. And Bill Gates and others have been very open in being depopulist. I mean, they're not really hiding it from you. They're just coming right out and saying it. So I think they are very clearly wanting to reduce the population. And they give some sort of weird backwards logic about how vaccines actually help it, rather than saying that, well, maybe they're just actually sterilizing people and causing them to be unable to reproduce. But then, or killing them, because that happens as well. And they don't call it vaccine death, but it is. But I don't know. I mean, looking into it myself, I'm saying it's pretty clear that that's what's going on. I don't know how. I wouldn't call it a theory. I think it's just pretty obvious that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, Americans, we're just getting it differently. They think we're immune to this testing, and at a certain level, the oligarchs will look at the mass of humanity or the American population and come to the same conclusion: it needs to be reduced. Too. And there's a business model here. Maybe we'll get into the broader issue of the medical industrial complex and how that was formed, because that goes back to the early 20th century with Rockefeller and how the Rockefeller family took over medicine with the creation of the allopathic medicine as being the dominant form of medicine, and the Flexner Report, which they gave a bunch of money to med schools to teach a certain type of medicine, which was, it was based on petroleum-based drugs, surgery, the heroic intervention, and this marginalized natural homeopathic medicine. So that kind of affected how we all look at medicine, when you were dealing with your son and a doctor, you looked at the person with the white coat as an authority figure. A lot of that is a part of the Rockefeller, I guess you could say the Rockefeller program of promoting that view of medicine, all the propaganda, the psychological warfare, the myth of the wonder drug, right? We see those in movies where the drug is flown in at the last minute and it's injected into the person, they're saved.
the zombie apocalypse or what have you.
or just growing up watching all the medical dramas, right?
Whether
it's ER or Marcus, depends on how old you are, ER, Chicago Hope, or Marcus Welby, MD, or Medical Center, and all these medical shows, Dr. Kildare, and it was always the heroic doctor, and all this was a marketing strategy for their product.
Right, and it's what they don't tell you is how much these doctors go through medical school. When we have a couple of doctors, and they run it basically like a cult or a fraternity or something when they're going through medical school, because they use a lot of the same mind control tactics and indoctrination tactics, like sleep deprivation and not giving them adequate, they're not having adequate access to nutrition, not giving them anything. They can't ask questions or have any kind of critical thoughts. If they are, the professor or whoever will ridicule them. So it's basically, it's a practice that's done where the hires will ridicule the lowers, and then the lowers will ridicule, the residents will ridicule the interns, and so on and so on. And so they use this form to basically keep them in line. So anybody who asks a question then becomes ostracized. And this happens in medical school.
That's an excellent point.
So by the
point.
Time they become doctors, they're not only are they have they been basically indoctrinated into believing in this system and just shutting up if they think otherwise, they are deeply in debt. That's the other thing people realize, is they think, well, doctors are, they make so much money, but when they have finished medical school, they're about $180,000 to $100,000 in debt, and so they're paying off their student loans, and they're very vulnerable to getting to taking in money from these pharmaceutical companies. I mean, a lot of these companies that insurance companies, for example, Blue Shield, will offer a $400 incentive for each fully vaccinated person in a doctor's practice. If they have 62% vaccination, fully vaccinated, they'll give them as much as $400 per person. So if you think, if you factor in that these people are deeply in debt, they're paying off, you know, their student loans, and they're trying to make a living on for their families and do what they have to do, they're just going along to get along. They're not really asking critical questions, because those questions will prevent them from being successful in their field, in their job. And so they're their attention to this. But then we give these people our authority because we think that they've been taught something in school that we haven't. You know, we give them, they're a part of a league, a club that we don't belong to. But really, I mean, if you spend about 2 days on vaccine research, you already know more than your doctor. I mean, that, yes. That's how easy it is.
And these pharmaceutical companies hire beauty contest winners and cheerleaders to market the drugs. I've listened to a couple of shows about that, how the strategy of marketing these things. And also they resort to other tactics, from what I understand as well, like, a doctor will get a beautiful girl and visit him and things like that. Prostitution,
right. I mean,
bribery, yeah.
If you go to your doctor's office, a lot of times you'll see these people waiting in the lobby. When I used to take the kids to the doctor, I would always see, you know, these well-dressed, good-looking people sitting in the lobby, and they're from your pharmaceutical company. They're going to go in there and try to give the doctor samples. I mean, it's no different than what street drug dealers do. They give them samples for free, you know, and then they start to give them incentives and things to take them. And, you know, and then later the pharmaceutical companies are benefiting. They're making the money as the doctors are starting to prescribe these. They're going to be making a bunch of money. And they do this. And we interviewed on my show, Gwen Olson, who wrote a book called Confessions of an RX Structure.
Oh,
and
yeah.
She did exactly
yeah.
that. And she yeah, did that. Yeah. And she exposed all this in her book about how it works and how they do hire attractive people to go in and sell these pharmaceuticals. And the doctors, they don't know anything more than what the pharmaceutical reps tell them. So all they know is what the drug does, what symptom it's to be used for, mm-hmm. or what diagnosis it's to be used for. They actually don't even know what's in them or what the side effects are. They don't know anything about the drug, other than what the pharmaceuticals rep tell them. And these aren't doctors. Like you said, these are beauty, you know, attractive, just good looking people who are well-spoken. That's what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who you're getting your prescribed medicines from.
And they also like buy the office lunch.
Oh, they not only do that, but I mean, they'll offer incentives for things like trips to Hawaii. And, you know, things for the doctors, I mean, they call them incentives, which those are kickbacks. They're kind of like bribes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if their doctors are deeply in debt, they're probably not going to be able to afford a trip to Hawaii otherwise. So they'll just take it. So this is what goes on and, you know, behind closed doors. And we don't even realize that that's what's going on, and how there's this financial conflict of interest with the doctors and the pharmaceutical companies. There's this very unsavory, you know, relationship that people should really be privy to, but we're not, you know, we just don't know about it unless you look at somebody like Gwen Elson's book and you research it on your own. You just don't know about it.
I mean, it is a cartel. The American Medical Association is a private organization that has been able to use the force of law to monopolize the providing of medical care or health care or whatever you want to call it. And so they've used the law to successfully marginalize any competing paradigm to their system. And that was, you know, the licensure, things like that is another key way of doing that. And, of course, the license is something they can hang over the duck, because you're going to, as Andrew Wakeer will find out, you can lose your license rather quickly if you challenge the system. And, you know, even if you're doing it in good faith, like he's just suggesting that there may be a connection between the MMR and autism, and he ends up losing his license for that and have his career ruined. And so that message goes out. And your point about medical school is so important, because it is, that it's like a cult. And people are overworked. They exploit the labor of residents and interns because they can get away with it. And like you said, the attitude is like it is like a cult where I went through that when I was young, and now you're going to go through it. And it's like a boot camp, you know? Yeah, and that's so true. And that's just the way the system works. Like, what people don't even think about this. Is it really smart to make a resident work 16-hour shifts?
Right.
I mean, is that good? Yeah, is that good management? I mean, is that good management? I don't think it is.
It's really not. But that's what they go through. And they go through sleep deprivation, sensory deprivation, because then they're trapped inside the hospital for so many hours that they don't even see sunlight.
It's mind control. And
it's mind control. And then they may not even be able to eat or, you know, do any of these things, or they can sleep. Even if you see in these doctor shows, and we look at it as so noble. But it's really just, I mean, it's a way to keep them from thinking critically because they're too busy. They're just trying to make it through their day and do the best that they can and not really taking the time to think, is this necessary? You know, what is it that I'm injecting? What is it that I'm doing here? Does this person really need surgery? And there's been some, I don't know if you're familiar with Sean Siegel's work. He did, he does a show, I think it's the vaccine myth, and Sean Siegel had a whistleblower. It's somebody from worked in an ER, a nurse who admitted that yes, when people come in who are unvaccinated, that doctors are actually they will purposely put them through tests that are unnecessary, just as a form of punishment. So if you come in and you say, well, you know, I'm not vaccinated, they'll start going through it, even though they know that it's not a threat or not a risk. It's kind of just a way to send the message out to the unvaccinated that, you know, you're a problem.
Yeah.
And you better get your vaccines because, you know, if you don't, then you're going to have to go through all of this and you should be afraid of the diseases that you have and the diseases that you're spreading. But it's not true because the unvaccinated we see over and over again are less sick and have less disease.
Yeah.
Occasionally they'll get sick too. And so they'll have to end up, you know, in the ER and stuff. And so, but this is going on.
Look at the Amish. They're not dropping dead. Right. They don't get any of that stuff. They're healthy because the food is purer. So they don't get sick, or they get better when they do get sick. Yeah. There's a few years ago, there was a girl that was diagnosed, I guess, with leukemia. Mm-hmm. And they were an Amish family, and the state ordered her to get the standard care, and they just disappeared, and she reemerged 3 years later, totally cured, without any treatment. She got better.
Yeah,
you know, I heard a doctor talking about how they were doing some like pathological studies on some old men that passed away, and they found that they died of just heart attack old age and all that, and they found signs of cancer that they had cancer and cured themselves of it, but they never got any screening or treatment for it. And so it's just it's like so they never just got over it. They were healthy and they fought it off because your body repairs itself otherwise, because you don't go through the stress of the standard care like chemotherapy and things like that. But you make an important point here is the well, one thing I like the trauma aspect of it, because that's used all across society to control society.
Yeah.
And a hospital, hospitals are traumatic just by their very nature. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to be, but they're set up to be. I remember, for my children when they were born, what a hassle and how traumatic it was just to stay in the hospital. My wife hated it.
Yeah.
And there was no need for it. It was all an insurance scam, more or less. But there's a deeper, I think, meaning here, because they want you to feel – they want you to be fearful and traumatic because, like you said, you suspend critical thought when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and you're right. It is – they do induce trauma. And and as far as like – I don't – when I do talks on the vaccines, I don't always get into this subject, but when you go to the hospital as a mother and you're to have a baby, they induce trauma. And I mean, and birth trauma is a huge part of what we're seeing in this problem, this huge medical problem. Because I don't know about with your wife, but when I was pregnant with Aiden, I mean, even during my prenatal care, they did a lot of unnecessary things like ultrasounds. I had many ultrasounds because he was a big boy. He was actually almost 10 pounds and I'm 5'2". So I wasn't, he was a boy. And so they thought, well, there's this problem. Your baby is so big, you know, you're not going to be able to carry him. So they'll convince mothers that they actually can't do what their bodies are actually designed to do by nature. And that you actually need a doctor to deliver a baby, which isn't necessary at all.
That's right.
So when Aiden was born, you know, we were essentially put through the ringer by this doctor who handled my prenatal care. And he wanted to induce labor before Aiden was even due. He was trying to get me to go into the hospital just for his own scheduling. And then they'll give you, the mother, all these drugs like Pitocin, which induces labor and forces it before the time is ready. And, you know, these types of things. And when I declined, he told me that I was, well, it's nothing worse than having a dead baby. You know, he kind of tried to use this fear tactic against me. He did use his fear tactic against me to try and get me to agree before Aiden was ready to come out. And when he did finally come out, you know, then they took him away from me in the hospital before I was able to start nursing him. They told me, they took me from the delivery room to the recovery room. And when I was in the recovery room and I was waiting for them to bring Aiden to me, it took them 6 hours to deliver him to me. And when they did finally, they said, well, you know, he was really hungry, or his blood sugar was low. We tested his blood sugar and he actually was a little bit low. So we had to give him a little formula. So we know you wanted to breastfeed, but we gave him a little bit of formula. And so I was upset. But he was able to latch on and nurse, so I kind of let it go. But then the next day, my husband's in the room with me because everybody had left me. So I was sitting there alone, not able to get up and run down the hall saying, where's my baby? So I kept calling them saying, it's been 6 hours, where's my baby? And they were like, oh, we'll look into it, we'll look into it.
The next we'll day, my husband it. Read the
– yeah, we'll look into it, we'll see where your baby's at. The next day, my husband read the chart, and it actually – they had lied to me. And he didn't have low blood sugar. They just couldn't find my room. Okay. So they couldn't find me. So they went ahead and fed him because he looked like he was getting hungry. He was starting to mouth. And so they went ahead and fed him. But, so basically they caused this separation anxiety for both of us because we were separated for 6 hours, which is way too long. You should not be away from your baby for that period of time right after you've given birth and wasn't able to nurse yet. And all of this, so this kind of stuff sort of sets these children up for failure. And I mean, and not only that, I mean, and then they lied to us. And the other thing a lot of people don't realize, I mean, going back to the whole experiment, human experimentation thing, they will take your DNA in the hospital. So once you sign off on a hospital birth, you're actually agreeing to a lot more than you think you are. So one of the things that they won't tell you is that they do these things called newborn screenings, where they take a bit of the DNA of the child, and they hold on to that. And then what their claim is that they're looking for illnesses, for genetic illnesses, but they do a whole genetic makeup on them for genome projects and so on. So you're getting a lot. So, you know, all these things are going on. You don't really realize it. And a lot of kids are actually vaccinated in the hospital for things like, you know, on the first day, they'll be given like hepatitis B or vitamin K shot.
That's insane.
It's just insane.
Hep B for a newborn baby.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah.
He's not. Most newborn babies aren't sexually active, nor are they intravenous drug users.
Right, exactly. Most are not. You're right.
Yeah. And I mean, those are two things I bring up to people when I talk about vaccines. I said, first of all, okay, do not get in the whole vaccine issue, because the authorities tell me now that pregnant mothers should get flu shots and newborns should get shots for vaccines for hepatitis B, which is a sexually transmitted disease for the most part. How does that make any sense?
It doesn't.
And people look at me and they don't have an answer for me. Says, now, if they're wrong about that, which is so basic, why would I trust them with anything at that point?
Yeah, I mean, and they say that they need it. It's like, why would they need it at such a young age? It doesn't even make sense at all. And even the vitamin K shot has a lot of toxins in it.
Mm-hmm.
And people think, well, it's just a vitamin, right? But there's a lot of toxins. In fact, there's mercury in some of the vitamin K shots.
Yeah.
And this is given to a newborn, and in most cases, it's unnecessary. So if you go to other countries in Europe and things, they don't actually give the vitamin K shot. A lot of them will use drops in high-risk cases. So a high-risk case would be somebody who they fear might have some bleeding out. They won't be able to, their blood won't be able to clot. But in most cases, it's completely unnecessary. So the majority of prenatal care in this country is unnecessary. And there's a staggering number of cesarean sections. In some hospitals, they're looking at almost 50%.
Yeah.
And so that's huge number of women who they probably don't need those.
No, not 50%. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are some, the statistics are very high. And in this country, we are a first world country, but we have a very high rate of infant deaths, infant mortality. And so given all of our advances in medicine, you would think that we wouldn't have such a high rate of infant mortality. You'd think that would be something that would be rare, but it's not.
Well, like, I remember the flu shot. I mean, I just remember being told that obviously I wasn't, I was younger. I didn't really think, but I always remember that pregnant women shouldn't get vaccines or flu shots because they're a baby. Then this whole flu thing started. Well, because if a woman gets the flu, that can cause that causes an increased risk of autism. So they need to get the flu shots so they don't get the flu. Well, it turns out it's the immunological reaction to the flu which causes the complications for the baby. So even if you give a woman a flu shot, she's going to have the immunological reaction, which is going to have the problem for the unborn baby. And so, so it makes no sense. It's just that, because it's not the flu that's doing it; it's the woman's immunological response to the flu. That's at least that's how I understand it. And so, if you give them the flu shot and they have the immunological response, you're gonna create a problem, increased risk for the unborn baby. It just doesn't make any sense. And again, like most things with the flu, is vitamin C, vitamin D. And most people, if they're healthy, will experience mild symptoms or just be sick for a while. But to be shooting women up with this, not to mention all the, like you said, not just that, it's with everything else that comes with the shot, the formaldehyde, the mercury, and whatever else falls in or they put in they don't tell you about. And it is a needle. It's an invasion. That's another thing. We've gotten used to needles in our arms and we're constantly poked and prodded and probed by these ghouls. because they can charge for it.
Like that's just one last thought on the flu shot with the pregnant women. It's not tested for safety on pregnant women, by the way. I mean, they give it to pregnant women, but if you look at their vaccine insert, it actually hasn't been tested for safety. And a few years ago, I want to say it was Eileen Danneman who runs the Vaccine Liberation Army, and now the National Organization for Women. They found that the pregnant women who were receiving the flu shot had about a 200% increased risk of having a miscarriage, and many of them it would have been higher, but they didn't count the stillbirths.
Well, bingo.
So some of the women were giving. So that's out there too.
They laced, like I said, the whole idea with the, remember we mentioned the tetanus thing, and that was there to, wasn't that there to bring on miscarriages? So why wouldn't they, think about it. Oh, they only do it to Nigerians or Guatemalans. They wouldn't do it to Americans. right.
Right.
I
mean, and not only that, but the HPV vaccine, the Gardasil, that's given to teenage girls. Now they're giving it to boys.
But they start
it. It's what? Which is ridiculous because, you know, boys need to protect their cervix, right?
Well, did these doctors never have that talk with their parents? They don't.
Right, exactly.
Well, even with the right. girls, it makes no sense because a normal healthy girl, even if she encounters the HPV virus, human papillomavirus, would just slough it off. It's just the women that have problems, at least from what I understand, again, I'm just doing what I've read, is it's the people who have poor health.
Yes, exactly.
A prostitute, drug user, or something like that, or a woman who is really promiscuous, which stresses your immune system, these things. But it's ridiculous to give these – not to mention the risk that it involves, you know, because the neurological damage that that these things create, you know.
Well, HPV is causing sterility as well, and it's been – I mean – and it's just it's just caused a huge mess of problems since they brought in this HPV vaccine, the Gardasil. And I actually have a friend who's been sick since she was 13, and she's in her 20s now, and she still has is trying to regain the ability to walk from the damage that was caused by the vaccine. And it's just so this is causing sterility, but I mean back to that point, it's causing it. Even before when young women or young girls are just starting to become, you know, just starting to have their menstrual cycle, just starting to become fertile and able to have babies, they're being stopped from doing so. And then they're finding a lot of the reactions. One of the more common reactions to the HPV vaccine is that, you know, if the girl has just started her menstrual cycle, she'll stop having it. So then she's, you know, they're seeing sterility or they're seeing like a delayed response or, you know, in her ability to have a normal menstrual cycle. And then they'll start to have other problems related to that, like endometriosis and other things, like just inflammation of the uterus and things like that.
Well, that's so more, it's that's not just, that's just more money for the medical industrial complex. This you'll need drugs and treatment for that stuff. And of course, this is a big boon to the fertility industry. You know, you know, the whole idea of the, you know, people, and you know that's a step towards control because that's, you know, if you have to go to the fertility clinic to have a baby. You can you can regulate the, you know, birth much easier as opposed to the old fashioned way, right? Peasants meeting.
Yeah.
the friction of peasant loins, as someone once put it. You know, it's so uncontrolled. It's so uncontrolled and so reckless. You know, people having people falling in love or just a passionate moment at creating another human being. Oh no, that just isn't, you know, you can't control it that way. But
well, this is like the trend, right? It's the push towards controlling how people conceive, controlling the outcome of the baby. You know, like we saw there was
technocracy.
A science fiction movie. And what's that?
It's technocracy.
Yeah. And then there was that movie Gattaca where they would take I mean, this is not too dissimilar what they're doing now. You get the DNA of the baby when they're first born and it can tell you what kind of diseases that they're supposed to have and so on. And so this starts to discourage people from wanting to have natural babies because they think that they can control what the outcome is going to be. So they call this designer babies. And this is actually going on. But right now people have to pay for them. But they can go to clinics where they can say, you know, we have girls, we want a boy, you know, or vice versa. And try and control that and get these designer babies, or we want a baby with blue eyes, we want whatever. And so a lot of the trend, what we're seeing is that these problems that these vaccines and other environmental issues are creating are then leading to, they're trying to blame it on genetics. So they're doing all this genetic testing to try and find the specific genes that will cause these problems or might lead to a bigger problem. And, you know, and then are pushing this idea of people having medically assisted conception so that they could control the outcome of the health of the child.
Medically assisted conception? It doesn't sound intimate to me.
It's not intimate at all. But it's just bizarre because it's like, this is really going on. These are the kinds of things you see in science fiction movies and you don't think like, well, that's not really going happen, or that's just a story, right? But no, this is really going on.
Well, the idea, you know,
I read
the baby,
about a couple of years ago about designer babies, and there's a clinic in San Francisco where these people came from Australia, and they had I think four boys and they wanted a girl, so they flew all the way out there to pay this clinic so they make sure that the next one was going to be a girl. I mean, it's really strange.
You know, that also throws everything off because nature has a way of, you know, giving, I think it's a slight balance in favor of women, I think. Mm-hmm. And then she kind of works out. Yeah. And that kind of makes you sure that there's roughly one girl for every boy. And yeah. you start having what you have like in China, you know, when they had the one-child policy and you had this shortage of women. Of course, that's a very unstable social condition when you have a shortage of women. Men start to become very antisocial at that point. That's just the audacity, the hubris that we can think we can plan we can plan these out better than the creator can, and we can improve upon the way that people are made.
Right.
It's just one of the now. Another, I heard it. Hold the whole medical. Back to the medical industrial complex. I heard a talking about it. How, if you just look how it's financed, how it's put together as a business model now. How the whole medical industry has become financialized with bonds and these, the huge capital investment and whether it's the cancer industry and the heavy all the equipment and testing and the buildings that are built that are there to provide one type of treatment. And for that type of expense, that type of investment, the investors expect a return. This is why if a doctor comes along and he's able to provide some sort of alternative treatment at a fraction of the cost, he's not received very well by the medical establishment because they have all that expensive equipment and drugs that they need to get and need to get paid for and make money from. And of course, the pharmaceutical companies have their investors to answer to. And they have a fiduciary responsibility to return a certain amount of investment and dividend to their stockholders. And this goes to the sociopathic nature of the corporation itself. But but if you look at these huge expansion hospitals and these bonds need to be paid, and the only way they get paid out is if they have returned customers. So you can't have people getting better. It's a business model.
Yeah, it is. And there, it was about a year and a half ago. I wrote this article. There was a trend. One of the doctors who had been working on vaccines, and he had been treating a lot of children with autism. He actually had two autistic children himself. Dr. Jeff Bradstreet had been found dead after an alleged suicide. And it didn't look like a suicide. I mean, he had shot himself in the chest, as so goes the official story, and there was no sort of reason behind, he didn't leave behind a note or any kind of reason for wanting to kill himself. And those that knew him, including his own family, launched an investigation because they didn't believe the official story. They didn't believe that he had committed suicide. So when I started looking into this and I started seeing how many children he was actually saving, I thought, what was interesting, I mean, this guy, he had been in the military. He was very well accomplished. He had been in the Air Force, and he was also a Christian. He had been a minister, and he had a son with autism who was an adult who had just graduated from high school, and he really had a lot going on for himself, and he had just given a lecture at the Autism One conference called How Close Are We to an Autism Cure? And so what I was finding was that when I started doing this research was that the medical industrial complex is very invested in there not being cures to disease, and particularly autism, which people may not realize. Not only is it hugely exponentially rising, because as I said, when Aiden was diagnosed, it was 1 in 150. Now it's about 1 in 50. So this is just 10 years ago. This increase has occurred. But not only is it a neurological problem, as we were talking about, but it's also immunological. And people who have this disorder are more likely to die younger. And some of the stats are saying that they die as young as 40. And these are due to immunological problems. They're more likely to have cancer. They're more likely to have gastrointestinal issues. They're more likely to have... I mean, so it's really basically every area of medicine is getting money and making something out from this epidemic happening, because it's not really autism, it's vaccine injury. So the vaccine themselves are causing this whole cascade of problems, from ranging from allergies and immunology and so on and so forth. And not only that, but because it's also a neurological disorder that does create behavioral symptoms, it's going into psychology, it's going into behavioral science, it's going into job training and occupational therapy. There's not a single area that hasn't been creating new jobs and new wings for this rise, because it's such a big thing now. And what I also found was that there was even companies like Google, and so they're putting on conventions and fairs to recruit adults with autism in order to try and make jobs for them. But they're actually trying to find jobs for them, and the military as well. There was a whole wing of autistic adults in Israel who were being hired by the military, like, to look up codes and look up things like this.
Savants. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's a small percentage. I mean, the majority of people on the autism spectrum are not going to have those savant qualities, but the ones that are being recruited by the military. And not only that, I mean, but even those that aren't necessarily savant, but are just willing to take orders and not ask questions, are also being brought in to be recruited, you know, for military. And
that's really interesting.
I found this whole rabbit hole, and I found with Dr. Bradstreet's work, especially Dr. Bradstreet, who committed suicide, so they say, he nobody believed it. I mean, I have to respect the families, and they just didn't believe that was true. So I didn't either. But and I did meet him a couple of times, but I can't say I knew him well enough to, you know, or I knew him really, so I wouldn't know. But the research that he was doing was, he was really looking into things that were going on in the vaccines, like viral load and things that were contaminants, that, you know, the SV40 and cancer causing viruses that were being found in vaccines. And he was finding, not only he was finding in his patients with autism, and he was finding things like viruses that weren't supposed to be there, you know, that were being found as vaccine contaminants, Epstein-Barr, and, you know, other different, what was it, mycoplasma, which there was a doctor named Garth Nicholson. He did heavy research into Gulf War syndrome, and what he found over and over again was that the military who had come down with Gulf War syndrome, some of them didn't even go into the Gulf, but they had received the anthrax vaccine. Mm-hmm. And every time they had tested the anthrax vaccine, they found that it had been contaminated with something called mycoplasma, which is walking pneumonia. So it's basically, you know, it's just pneumonia, but it doesn't lay people out enough. But it caused enough sickness that these people had just a series of problems, and they didn't seem to be able to just get rid of it. It wouldn't just kind of go away. They just sort of caused all these other a cascade of other health problems. But he found it over and over and over again in these cases where people had Gulf War syndrome, whether they had been deployed or not. And so so what I found was that Dr. Bradstreet had actually found this also in his patients with autism.
Hmm.
And my son Aiden also had titers for mycoplasma. So it's something that we're finding is present in the vaccines quite frequently. So I don't know. I mean, I can't. I mean, y'all can hear that and just, you know, make your own opinion based on what I just said. But it doesn't sound like, it doesn't sound like the medical industrial complex is being run by the Boy Scouts. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, yeah, because it's all links into the to the New World Order, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have if companies are looking into vaccines as an indirect way to produce a sort of a cadre of savants that they can use in their production lines, or a military or intelligence agencies looking to exploit it. Of course, this is going to be these corporations that do this are going to be, you know, publicly traded, and they have a business model. And if someone comes along and threatens to expose this or develop a treatment that reverses this, and you know, they're gonna shut them down. They're gonna, you know, arrange for a suicide or an accident, and that, you know, you've heard those stories are all across industry. Like the who was it? It was Diesel who was, you know, developed, who originally diesel fuel was supposed to be I think developed from peanut oil and plants, and then he on his way to meet the oil companies, he jumped off the ship in the English Channel and drowned. Mm-hmm. And then Diesel's been petroleum based, and of course you have people who have challenged the big oil companies. Like I think it was Mattei, the guy who ran the Italian oil company, who's negotiating deals to get around the Seven Sisters, and his plane blows up. And right. Of course, then the various coups that are well known, like in Iran in 53, and the various oil coups, and you know, that have occurred around the world, and to control the economic system. I think, It was that Harryhausen, the German banker, who in the late 80s publicly came out in support of third world debt forgiveness because it was just unpayable. And then he was kidnapped by communists supposedly, and then murdered. He can't have that. And so obviously, if someone's going to within the medical industry, I think we've heard recent stories about certain nutritionists and alternative therapists, just or therapy experts turning up dead, committing suicide, and being found floating in a lake, things like this. These people, through their treatment, they start to challenge the system and develop an alternative, and it gets out there, and that can upset a business model.
For sure. And it's, and the thing about the point that I was making in that article was the fact that this business model is so vast because it's going into so many areas of this industry, not its effect. It's, I mean, the whole medical industry profiting off of the cascade of issues that the vaccines are causing. So it's the backbone of the industry, not just because it's, I mean, and honestly, like, there's no other reason to go to the doctor, as you've probably experienced with your 2-year-old. It's like, once you're, when you decide not to vaccinate, you don't have to go every 2 or 3 months. You just don't go that often. So you're really not, they're losing a lot of money by you people who aren't vaccinating, first off, because they get, that's really all pediatricians do for the most part. And then all of the illnesses that aren't, you know, the vaccines cause, you know, you have to go back to the place that caused the problem in the first place for a solution, right?
Yeah, that's why they impose things like national health care or like Obamacare, mandated insurance, where you're forced to pay into an insurance company. I'm not sick. So what do I just go see a doctor for? Well, you might be sick. Well, no, health is a natural state. That's, it used to be that health was a natural state. And it wasn't everyone now is presumed to be sick. Well, I don't have health insurance. What am I going to do? Well, are you sick? No, then what are you worrying about? You know, health insurance, if it really functioned like health insurance, it would cover catastrophic illness or an accident. And it would be a few hundred dollars a year, and anything anything more than $10,000 would be covered, because other than that, then that can be managed at least by most people who have jobs. But instead, people have this idea where you have these health benefits where it covers routine stuff like childbirth. That's not an insurable event; it's foreseeable. Health insurance in your house is there to protect from an unforeseeable event, a catastrophic event. A childbirth isn't catastrophic; it's not foreseeable. But people have gotten so accustomed to having health, employer-based health insurance that developed out of World War II, and then it's tax deductible. It's not taxable. And then people got conditioned for having health insurance as opposed to paying out of pocket, and that itself created a lot of the inflation in the business, because people started third-party payment system and all that. But that got people accustomed to going to see the doctor more often, even when they weren't subsidizing that people. Thinking, well, what if I get sick? These wellness visits, like, what? I'm like, baby's fine. Then they scare you, because what if something is wrong and they find it, I suppose that could happen.
They make you so afraid of the illness. And that was part of the thing that that got me to keep letting them do that to Aiden, was the fact that, they really frightened me into thinking that he could get these sicknesses and that I was going to be so negligent by letting him get the measles or letting him get, pneumococcal or any of these things that they were vaccinating. And they don't tell you the thousand other things that are floating around that people can get sick from that we don't have vaccines for. We only hear about the things that there's vaccines for, or that they're in development of creating a vaccine for. We don't hear about all the other things that cause people to get sick and die. People do get sick and die. That's just part of life. But you don't hear about that.
How about just waiting in a waiting room with everyone who's sick? in a doctor's office. Right. I bet you more children have been injured driving to the doctor's office than they would have, you know, than not going to see a doctor. But again, people don't look at it that way. But I think this goes back to trauma. People are terrified, and you know, the whole system is designed to traumatize. It's not just medicine; that's politics in general. You know, it's, you know, national security, terrorism. Right. There's terrorism everywhere. We need to be raped at the airport now, humiliated at the airport because there's a terrorist somewhere, and you know, and it's the same thing. It's the same psychological effect. It's awful.
And if you think about the trauma that the child goes through. And when they are being vaccinated is another thing that I started talking about recently, because it's not anything I looked at, you know, initially. Most people just kind of look at the toxicity effect, but they don't think about the trauma that it's inducing, because little babies, I mean, they're really attached to their mothers still for the first couple years of their lives. They're not they don't have their own self, their own ego. So when you take them into the doctor's office and they're in this environment that's unfamiliar and it's frightening, and then there's these other adults that have this needle pointed at them, they're terrified. And so they're looking at their parents like, oh, can, you know, is this okay? Am I safe? And, you know, they're screaming. And a lot of times the parents are actually helping, you know, or assisting in it and letting them, you know, holding them down and things like that. And so they're being tortured and freaking out. And parents are a part of it. It really is very traumatizing, and it breaks the bond of trust. I mean, how is the child then supposed to trust their parents if their parents allowed them to get hurt like that? It's a really sinister thing if you think about it all the way around.
It goes back to that medical school motto, whereas I went through it, darn it, you're going to go through it. And the same thing with schooling.
Exactly.
With the schooling system. Look at the schooling system. Look at public schools or high schools or whatever. What a menacing, insane environment that is. And it's not conducive to proper, healthy development. It's designed to make the kid feel insecure. You, either you're a bully or you're bullied on.
Right.
And it's just large, you know, institution you walk into, and you drop the kid off there and you drive away. And the whole society is geared towards doing that, because now, even now, you know, because the larger economic picture and also what we expect to be a comfortable middle-class American life, you know, high consumer rates, so both parents have to work. That means the mother cannot breastfeed. She has to go back to work.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, if you live in a society that acknowledged the necessity of a baby breastfeeding, that woman cannot work, or at least not work in the sense that, you know, going in an office and being a wage slave for some corporation, which somehow has been sold to women as liberation.
Yeah.
You know? There's a whole economic model based on that, because if women really are, they're nurturing their babies, and, you know, I'm a sexist to the extent that I believe men and women are different, and women and mothers have a vital role to play, and especially in the child's early development, very different from fathers, but complementary but very different. And so I think the most obvious example of that is breastfeeding, and you got to be there to breastfeed.
Right. You know? No, it's, you know, just women have this thing called a womb, and it's just a fact of how it is. And when, you know, you get close to the end of your pregnancy, it's probably difficult to keep up a full-time job. And then you have, I mean, it's just as simple as that. It's just what it is. And breastfeeding, like you say, is so hugely important. Not only, I mean, and just to add to the ridiculousness of vaccination, you know, babies do not actually have their own immune system until they're about 4 or 5 months old. Mm-hmm. So when they're vaccinating them before that age, they know darn well that that's not going to work. And they're receiving all of their immunity through milk. Mm-hmm. When you see mothers in the store, you see them, your wife, and they just obsessively kiss their baby's head, what they're doing is actually taking in the pathogens that baby's interacting with in the environment, and their body is developing antibodies to that. It's the that's the true vaccination. That's the true immunity.
That is
and
funny.
So you're giving through your milk.
Yeah, you hold a baby. Yeah, you hold a baby. Mm-hmm. You just want to kiss them and touch them all over. And it's funny, because at the time that their immune system becomes educated, they start to resist that. You know, so it's all timed perfectly, because they start to develop a sense of self, and they start to struggle a little bit. Then they still play with you. But you're right. Yeah, it's all that kissing and all that. You know, the idea that, because the idea that, you know, the mother's interaction, the love, complements the biological necessity, you know, thing that's going on there. Where that immune system is getting educated. He's being introduced to these pathogens through his respiratory system, through his skin, the way he should be introduced to these things, as opposed to a cold needle injected into the muscle tissue.
We don't even know if it provides any immunity at all. And if it provides any, the best you're going to get is, 2 to 10 years. That's the best it can do. So it doesn't, but if you get it through natural, if you acquire it naturally, or if you get it through your mother's milk and so forth, it's a done deal. You know, it takes care of it and you don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm. No,
the immunity is for life.
Yeah. One thing I want to bring up before I let you go tonight is, of course, your son, it was the mumps, measles, and rubella that when you first noticed the problem. Was that it?
Yes.
Okay, because we had the case of a couple of years ago with William Thompson at the CDC.
Oh, yeah.
The revelations there, which didn't seem to – it's kind of been forgotten. The mainstream press never really covered it. Do you want to address that real fast? Because that seemed to vindicate Wakefield, right? His revelations.
There's a father of an autistic child named Brian Hooker, and he had been doing a lot of research into vaccines. Actually, he wasn't even looking at MMR. He was looking for the Marisol or mercury, because that's a whole nother rabbit hole that they did find it. Actually, that was causing these neurological problems as well. But as he was looking into it, a doctor who had been a researcher from the CDC and was a part of a study that was conducted to find if there was any connection between MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, and autism, Dr. William Thompson, he had been a part of this study. He actually contacted Brian Hooker and said that, he had a lot of guilt and had a lot of remorse over the fact that he was part of a cover-up, that basically they had found that the MMR was causing a rise in autism, especially in African-American males. And they found out that boys were more susceptible, African-American boys were more susceptible, and the age of the child played a role. And so they found all of this. But they covered it up by removing any of these, removing the majority of the cases that developed autism from the study. So they took things like if they didn't turn in a birth certificate, they would remove them from the study. They used little things like that, little nitpicky things, to try and just take them out of the study. And then one of the researchers in the study was a doctor by the name Julie Gerberding. And she actually appeared before Congress to give her findings and said that there was no correlation, but she was a part of the study. So she actually knew that there was a correlation and was a contributor and accessory to this lie. So that's what happened. And that was featured in the film Vaxxed, that was directed by Andrew Wakefield. And he was vindicated by a lot, because they did find that this whole thing, everything that he was saying was actually true. And they just covered it up. And this isn't happening. This isn't the only case. There was also there's also a case of Merck is being sued by some of the former researchers from their program who were working on the MMR vaccine and found that they were lying about the efficacy. And so the efficacy was not as high as what they were claiming in the CDC and the pharmaceutical company. So they, too, blew the whistle on the fact that that was a lie. And that's an ongoing lawsuit right now. They're trying to say that. So there's a lot of cover-ups going on. I mean, it happens all the time.
Well, because they bring the entire house down.
Yeah.
Because all the confidence in the medical system would be in the public health authorities, CDC, Health and Human Services. The whole medical industry would collapse. I think it was admitted way back. I think in the '60s when they had the problem, the polio vaccine was why the U.S. Public Health Service didn't tell the public that the problems with the SV40 virus and the polio vaccine. They said, "Well, we just don't want to tell people because then we'd lose their trust." I was like, "Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, you don't deserve their trust. So the public be damned. Right. We need to preserve our privileges and power." But you mentioned Gerberding. Julie Gerberding is her name.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, Merck was the maker of the MMR vaccine, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And she covered up that study. Who is her current employer now?
Merck.
Yeah, okay. right there. That's a story right there. I mean, that's the front page story right there.
Yeah, that's how it works. You know, the revolving door of pharma and the government, they'll go in and out of the CDC or the FDA and into, you know, or any of these, the NIH.
It's a PR thing for big pharma. And it's money. But again, I think it's also part of a larger project to re-engineer society to control it. But, you know, it's an oligarchical collectivist plan. It's sort of this idea of controlling the population, keeping everyone sick and weak so they pay into the system. And if they're fearful and weak, they're more manageable, as you know, and ultimately for perhaps a population reduction if they so decide. But it's in the meantime, it's a business model. The medical industrial complex does not want you to get better. It wants return customers, the same way that Apple Computer wants you to return, or same reason why a printer will break down after 5 years. It's planned obsolescence, you know. And so they kind of look at you the same way. They don't want you healthy. And again, this I think the reason. And see what you think if you agree. The reason why most people are resistant to this is because they've grown up, they've been taught to entrust themselves to these institutions, whether it's, you know, the Pentagon, national security, the colleges, or education institutions, is that we're supposed to trust, or doctors, we're supposed to trust these authority figures. And if we can sit back and trust these authority figures, we don't have any responsibility ourselves. We can just say, well, the experts take care of this. I can get on with my life and, you know, entertain myself to death, not really think about it. But once you really face the reality, once you go down the rabbit hole of it, it's very overwhelming, which is why most people simply don't want to address the issue. You know, so.
Yeah, it is over. I would agree with that. And I think that that's a good point to make, is that a lot of looking into this requires that you have to change your own life. Because if you are thinking that you're going to, you know, go to the doctor and that they're going to give you good health, you know, just by giving you a needle or giving you a pill and this and that, once you realize that that's not true and that it's actually in your hands and the responsibility is on you, and you have to start cooking and eating better and not just, you know, and doing all those kinds of things, it's very overwhelming. And people are not raised, you know, like you were talking about earlier, a lot of us didn't grow up with mothers at home who cooked and took care of us like that. So we didn't know how to do those things when we became adults.
That's, you know,
and I
nature.
Didn't know how to do that stuff. I learned that stuff. I mean, when Aiden got sick, I became, you know, a chef and a medical expert. And I mean, it was like, was like something I had no idea. I didn't know it was in me, but I had to do it because it was just necessity.
But
it was hard.
It is hard because it's a change of lifestyle. And also, when you're talking about these things, I talk about these things that family members they get very defensive because they think you're calling them out as being irresponsible, not being diligent, and then the ego thing kicks in. Are you calling me irresponsible? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying I myself vaccinated my kids when I thought it was the right thing to do. Each kid, I did less and less and less. I learned. And I'm not saying, you know, it's one of these things, but when you're confronted with the truth, you have two choices. You can ignore it or face it and proceed from there.
Right.
But that's the first reaction I usually get is, you know, first of all, what do you know? I don't wear a white coat. I'm not a doctor.
Right.
But that's when I pull out the whole idea of giving a baby a hepatitis B shot. I don't need a doctor. No, that's ridiculous.
Right.
I'm sorry. And in fact, if a doctor's telling me to do that, means I don't trust that doctor anymore. You know, since when have men in white coats ever done evil things? Like, are you kidding me? Read a history book.
Yeah.
You know? But again, it's a paradigm shattering event.
Right.
Because we're trained to go to college. We have to go to college and go into debt and get a mediocre middle class job. So, live a lifestyle that I think is our American birthright, but it requires a reevaluation of how we're living, and that's very difficult. I mean, I still haven't mastered that. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out how to make the changes. It's difficult, you know.
Well, it's the convenience age. I mean, it's only convenient because we are also busy. Everybody's got jobs and they're working and they're doing, and so you know, there aren't two parent, or there isn't one parent at home. Usually there are usually two parents at work and so on. And so we look for convenience, you know, easy way to healthy living. And it's very, very enticing. I mean, who doesn't want things to be easier? It, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, it's just normal human nature. You want to take the path of least resistance. You want to get the easiest road. And but then when you realize that that isn't going to, that it isn't like that, that you're not going to get health that way, you're not going to, you know, and you could be damaging your family and yourself, it's it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of time. And I, you know, and I've made so many changes. And I mean, my family's like, what are we allowed to eat? You know, they don't know. Cause I'm always saying, well, no, we can't have this anymore. We can't have that. And, but it took a lot of work and a lot of effort. And, you know, sure, I wanted it easy, but it wasn't.
Well, most of us don't know how to the extent that we've been engineered or programmed. And that's our consumer lifestyle, about what we think we want. And, you know, I think it was Edward Bernays who said that, you know, we're controlled by men that we do not know. All our habits, our taste, and our actions are shaped by men we never know, just through advertising. And I think a lot of that is just the expectation of the good life. Simple things like, I think it was Catherine Austin Fitz, I was hearing her talk, about if a simple thing like if Americans, she pulled out a figure, I think it was Americans spend $10 billion a year on carbonated soft drinks.
Yeah.
And $1 billion or $2 billion a year on fresh vegetables. And if people just reverse that and we spent more money on fresh vegetables and only $2 billion on soft drinks, most of the health problems would go away, like diabetes and things like that. And,
oh, sure.
You know, it's very simple things like that. And that's just a simple change like that. And, of course, it's not – all the processed cheap food we get isn't really cheap in the long run because we pay for it. And lower life expectancy, disease, chronic illnesses and diseases. The only problem is people aren't making connection between the Big Mac and the Diet Coke and their diabetes or their you know, their obesity or their inflammatory disorders. Because the doctors aren't telling him that because they have no idea about nutrition. But the whole idea is you can't, you know, hold the notion that food, you know, look at food nutrition as a medicine. Well, it is, because garbage in, garbage out. I mean, it's, so just one, and that's a relatively simple change to make. But that's the whole, look at the whole economy has been designed how, you know, local agricultural markets have been destroyed. So now we got to ship in vegetables from Chile or from the West Coast, and they pick them early. So they don't rot on the way, so that they're not ripe enough. Then they spray them with chemicals, make them look better. You know, so we're eating that. So it's a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So. Well, listen, April, I want to thank you. I've had you for almost 2 hours now.
Yeah.
And you have a family to take care of, so I don't want to – I can hear them in the background there. Can I ask you how your son is doing? I know you have two other kids, right? And
yes.
And your son, how is he doing? Can I ask you that?
Well, Aiden, I have two boys and a girl, and then they range in age. My oldest just turned 14. Aiden just turned 12, and then we have a two-year-old. But so Aiden is, he's doing better. You did touch on it a little bit, but we didn't get into it too deeply, the education system. So we pulled him from the education system just this last year and started homeschooling him, and it's been a really good year. So we, but he's still learning to speak. I mean, he's 12 and he's pre-verbal at the moment. So he's learning sign language, and whereas the whole family are learning sign language and things like that. But I mean, a lot of the issues we've been able to address through diet with the gastrointestinal problems, those finally did subside, and some of the other issues. And also homeschooling has been a huge helper and just reducing stress and anxiety. And that has had a huge impact on his health and development as well. So I'm a big believer in that too, but that's a whole nother side issue. But yeah, he's doing better this year, but I mean, we still have a long way to go.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm happy to hear that. You mentioned home. It is true, because the public school system is the main vector that the medical industrial complex gets to your kids.
Yep.
With the whole vaccination scam, you know, where they tell you have to have your kids vaccinated to get into the school. That goes all the way into college.
Yeah, it does. And some of the colleges are enforcing it now, too. In California, where we live, they just removed the religious exemption and the personal beliefs exemption. So you can only get a medical exemption if you want to go to public school. So in other words, you have to have a doctor sign off saying that you're medically incapable of getting a vaccine. And doctors who do that, there have been a few in the area who've done that, and they get the Wakefield effect. They get Wakefield effect. They'll end up in the LA Times as, you know, where they're being investigated for neglect, like Dr. Bob Sears down in Irvine, California. I think he's down in that area, or Newport Beach. He's one of them. He was signing medical exemptions. He had a 2 or 3 month old in there who had a vaccine reaction, so he told the parents to hold off on vaccines, and they ended up doing an investigation on him for that, just because he said he wanted to hold off because he had a reaction.
And I suppose
this is the kind of thing, and they love to publish that. They love to point that out because they want the other doctors to see it. So doctors are very hesitant to sign off on those. So if you live in California, homeschooling is your best option. Homeschoolers are exempt from having to fill that out. So, I mean, just to say, it's not just for that reason. It's homeschooling is better for other reasons as well. I mean, that wasn't our only reason for doing it, because Aiden actually could receive a medical exemption because he does have immunological problems. And the doctors did note that he had a vaccine injury and that his regressive autism was caused by the vaccines. The pediatrician who gave him the vaccines initially and gave him the autism diagnosis, those records were disappeared.
Really?
As did the records from the hospital. So we don't actually have, yeah. So that's what happened there. So when I went back later to try and get the medical records, they said that they were lost and couldn't find them.
Okay. Yeah, they're so good at keeping records until, you know, it's convenient to lose them. You know?
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, April, I want to thank you. I think we had a very productive, very stimulating talk tonight about these things. We covered a lot of ground. You've researched the topic and the issues very well, and you obviously it's a passion of yours for obvious reasons. I think as you get into these things, you realize how it connects to the wider issue of education, the economy, how the world is governed, and who really rules the world. And it's funny how us little people can be affected by it. We don't think that you tend to think of these things as kind of being academic issues or just larger issues, but really they reach down and touch every one of us. Even you're a little boy, even my children. And as you mentioned, I homeschool my kids for that very reason too, just to get them out of that system and let them, so they, at least they can develop some curiosity without having to be traumatized by the system.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, listen, thank you. I'll let you go.
You're welcome.
And tend to your children. And when I post this, I will send you the link.
I'll probably post it
later in the week. I went Thursday, probably Wednesday or Thursday. I'll send you the link. Now, is there anything else you want to say before I let you go tonight? Any other projects you're working on or that we should look out for?
That's it. I mean, just everybody, just to remind you, it's aidensrecovery.wordpress.com. That's where you can find me. And the podcast that I ran was Truth or Talk, which you can find at truthortalk.com. So either of those links, if you're interested in my writing and stuff like that, you'll be able to find it there.
And you are you're featured in the documentary by Ty Bollinger, The Truth About Vaccines?
Yes, Aiden and I are in that, and you can find the link to that at my website also.
Yeah, that's. I think I saw the first episode. All the episodes up now, or is it just the first one? I saw the first one.
I think they're on day 5 or 6 at this point. It's the first. It's 7. It's a series of 7.
Okay.
And I think we're on day 5 or 6 at this point.
Okay, and I guess with his work, that's free, right? It's accessible. I just saw it up on YouTube.
The first this week it's free. I think after that it is pay.
Okay, so you, if you wanted to support his work, you just go to his website.
Yes.
Okay.
Ty Bollinger's Cancer Truth.
I imagine if you go to YouTube, I saw it on YouTube. It has the all the links that will direct people if they want to support that work, because It isn't free to do this stuff. So.
Yeah, and and like I said, you can find it at my website too. I have the link that goes back to the Truth About Vaccines docuseries and Ty Bollinger's website and everything. So.
Great. Well, listen, thank you. I wish you and you and your family the best.
Thank you.
And perhaps I'll talk to you in the near future. Something else comes up. And I mean, because we just touched on a few things tonight. There's any number of things that we talked about tonight that could be an entire show.
Right.
So
that's true.
So maybe I'll in the near future I'll send you a note. We'll talk again.
Sounds good. I look forward to it.
Excellent. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye. Good night.
And if she asks you why, you can tell her that I told you that I'm tired of castles in the air. I've got a dream, I want the world to share, and castle walls just lead me to despair. Hills of forest green where the mountains touch the sky, a dream come true, I'll live there till I die. I'm asking you to say my last goodbye. A love we knew ain't worth another try. Save me from all the trouble and the pain. I know I'm weak, but I can't face that girl again. The reasons why I can't remain, perhaps she'll understand if you tell it to her plain. How can words express the feel of sunlight in the morning in the hills away from city strife? I need a country woman for my wife. I'm city born, but I love the country life. For I will not be part of her cocktail generation. Partners waltz, devoid of all romance. The music plays, and everyone must dance. I'm bowing out, I need a second chance. That girl again. Tell her the reasons why I can't remain. Perhaps she'll understand if you tell it to her plain. And if she asks you why, you can tell her that I told you that I'm tired. Castles in the air, I've got a dream, I want the world to share, and castle walls just lead me to despair.